Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 12:52 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 19th, and we have had a statement from the Federal Reserve, and they removed the patient clause from their statement. So that is clearly signaling that they are truly considering removing a quarter of a point from the interest rate level over the course of July. The market is probably now going to move on and start pricing in another rate cut in September. The 10-year yield has been compressing for much of the last 7 or 8 months. But the pace of the decline is picking up, and it was at a new closing low in here today. And this compression in yields is clearly reflecting the perspective that the bond market, at least, is pricing in the downward pressure that is being put on interest rates, not simply in the USA, but everywhere. What we've definitely seen over the course of the last couple of months has been a very clear trend towards cutting interest rates all over the world. And that was very different in 2018. Most central banks were raising interest rates. Now they're cutting interest rates. There is the potential, at least, that the European Union is going to cut into negative territory. Now, that has a real potential to create some friction, particularly in the currency markets. But it's also having a compression effect on government bonds. German bunds are at 28 basis points to the negative. That's a new low. Now, they're certainly in overbought condition, but it's a big question whether we're going to see them back above 0% if the ECB is serious about cutting interest rates into negative territory. But it's going to create a carry trade. What's particularly interesting right now is that the euro firmed in here today. Well, it firmed because the Federal Reserve is cutting interest rates. And this may be the beginning of a cutting cycle rather than just a one and done type of scenario. At the same time, Europe does not want a stronger currency, but this does look like a higher reaction low. Of course, the much bigger point, and I do think that this is underappreciated, is the fact that the Federal Reserve has been reducing the size of its balance sheet for the last 18 months, and that has corresponded with the relative strength of the dollar index. And with the end of that balance sheet runoff coming in really quite soon in September, then that is likely to represent a challenge for the dollar, and the dollar was down in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today. Now, that low put in earlier this month represents the region of the trend mean, and it's looking likely that it's going to be tested. What we are setting up for is the potential for a currency war, because there is going to be a competitive devaluation for different currencies. And the renminbi right now is still really very steady. There is a clear effort underway to try and hold the value of the currency steady. But with the prospect of lower interest rates coming through for the Hong Kong dollar, that is now starting to stoke interest in Hong Kong shares. And the H-share index broke higher in here today. And that was in a dynamic manner, and with the gap higher. It was exactly the same kind of phenomenon that we've seen in the Hang Seng, and that's also gapping higher in here today. But when we look at what's going on in terms of mainland shares, then they did rally initially and gave up the majority of that advance, still in positive territory for the day, but this is much more of a Hong Kong argument rather than a mainland bullish argument, just simply based on the interest rate outlook. The S&P 500 was in positive territory today and is coming back up to test the region of the peak put in just a couple of months ago. This has been a bullish consolidation. It had developed a short-term overbought condition relative to the trend mean, found support in the region of the trend mean and is now back in the region of those peaks, particularly the peaks put in January and October of last year. All other factors being equal, this looks like a clear bullish consolidation. What I find particularly interesting is that there has been a cottage industry has evolved in terms of predicting the next recession. I think there's two factors behind that. The first is that people do have a tendency to jump at shadows because most investors did not predict the last recession. So they want to get a marker down for predicting the most recent, the next one. And then, of course, there is the tension that we have in terms of geopolitical tensions, trade wars. What I find really very interesting as well, again, this is a very interesting period in markets. The narrative that we've definitely seen evolve is that over the last decade that China is an emerging economy, that it is the growing power, and that it's going to represent a major challenge to the established powers, and all people want to talk about is Thucydides' trap. There are two major points to counter that. The first is that the dawn of the nuclear age puts a real dampener on the ability of the major powers to go to all-out war because of mutually assured destruction. And if we look at the number of instances that we've had outright conflagration since the advent of nuclear weapons, then we haven't had any. So that does introduce a very different way of thinking. Doesn't necessarily mean that we're not going to have major wars in future, but it's going to probably therefore be based on new technology that I think nullifies the mutually assured destruction equation that has stopped big wars from starting over the course of the last 70 years. But there is an alternative narrative, and it is that the USA has turned from being the largest consumer of energy in the world to potentially being by far the most influential global swing supplier. And that is potentially as significant an entry into the geopolitical sphere as the rise of China. And yet it is receiving almost no commentary. This is, I think, something that really does need to be taken into account, that there are clear estimates that the USA is going to be producing upwards of an additional 15 million barrels over 2017 levels by 2030. Now, if that forecast is even remotely close to fruition, that represents a massive change in terms of the geopolitical status quo, but it is seriously bad news for countries like Iran and Russia. It also suggests that the USA has a trade weapon to deploy to tie allies to its sphere of influence without having the cudgel of energy imports having to overhang the willingness to tolerate whatever it is that Russia or Iran are trying to do. This isn't something that is getting even close to enough of commentary, but it represents a massive change. That also is going to affect the outlook for the trade war, because obviously China has got a major demand for energy. It is now the largest consumer of energy and is nowhere close to meeting its own needs. That's also why they are trying to develop electric vehicles. So these are very important changes that are occurring. I've had a number of questions asking about the outlook for markets, but what we've also seen in here today is that gold is breaking through the $1,350 area. And it hasn't quite completed the six-year base formation yet. It needs to sustain the move above $1,350. That is the minimum requirement to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, but it is certainly looking more bullish than it has done for quite some time. Now, if we are at a point where stock markets are on the cusp of breaking on the upside, and gold is on the cusp of breaking on the upside, and bond prices are already in a well-developed uptrend, something has to take the pressure, and that is likely to be fiat currencies. So that is very clearly pointing towards the potential that the purchasing power of fiat currencies is going to remain under pressure, because there is a clear potential that we are moving towards a low interest rate environment, and that is before we even begin to talk about the potential that we're going to have an overt adoption of modern monetary theory suggestions, or at least policies, in the aftermath of the next US election and potentially in other countries as well. We're already halfway there. The rather overt attempts by the Trump administration to subvert the independence of the Federal Reserve suggests that this compact between the spending profligacy of the government versus the ability of the Federal Reserve to even have the semblance of trying to curtail the expansion of the monetary base is rapidly moving towards a position where there is just going to be no difference, and that does open up the potential for a really significant deterioration in the dollar, most particularly when the Federal Reserve does end its balance sheet runoff and continues to lower interest rates. Then Europe is going to be a bastion, because they may be moving interest rates into negative territory. They're going to do whatever they can to arrest the advance of the currency, but Mario Draghi is going to be gone in 6 months' time. It looks increasingly likely that Jens Weidmann is going to be in charge. And then the question is whether Europe is going to wait for a crisis before they introduce a fiscal spending or stimulus program. So there is a realistic potential here that gold could be rallying at the same time as stocks, because the downward pressure that's likely to come to bear on fiat currencies is going to be really quite powerful. And that is one of the other reasons why Bitcoin is still really quite firm and is trading above the 9,000 level. Well, what we are starting to see in the cryptocurrency markets is that the established financial sector is looking on the crypto market with envious eyes, most particularly in view of the size of the potential market, but also because they want to control it. And Facebook's Libra is our cryptocurrency asset is probably at least a year away from launching, but Facebook does definitely want to create a mechanism through which they can monetize their massive user base in very similar manner to what both Tencent and Alibaba have already achieved with their Chinese clientele. When we think about the yield curve spread, what I find particularly interesting is that the spread has started to expand, not in a dynamic manner, but it is starting to expand. It's not usually until the yield curve starts to expand that we really do get a pullback in the stock market. That's usually when the Federal Reserve is easing aggressively and there is a clear risk of a recession. Now, as I said, predicting a recession has become a cottage industry, and everyone is talking about the fact that the yield curve was inverted. But it was only a portion of the yield curve was inverted. And it wasn't the classic difference between the 10-year and the 2-year. So I think that's a rather important characteristic. There is the additional point, and it does make sense to me at least, that the Muni curve, the high yield curve, or the corporate curves had not inverted, and generally they also need to invert in order to confirm the signal from an inverted yield curve. So what that does hold out the prospect of is that if the major central banks of the world do clearly attempt to start cutting interest rates in an aggressive manner, they may forestall the downward pressure on growth. And there was an additional statistic I saw today, was that fund managers have been raising cash at the highest rate since 2016. Well, fears about growth and a recession, coupled with people raising cash, that is not characteristic of what we see at the top of a major move in the market. It's usually the opposite. It's usually that people think that the expansion is going to go on forever, and that they are fully invested and highly leveraged when the market eventually peaks. Well, that really does suggest that ranges are explosions waiting to happen. The severity of the breakout can surprise investors, and it forces people to cover shorts and to try and get long in a very short period of time, which sends the market higher. We're at reasonable valuations right now, and it's usually not until we have unreasonable valuations that we see a market peaking. There is a clear potential here that we're going to see a bubble evolve, and then we're going to have a major pullback. That's when the overvaluation has become so silly that people think it's normal. And then you start to see some of the wheels come off the apple cart. So I think there is the real potential that we are moving towards a bubbly environment. And that suggests that we are potentially more like 1998 than 2000 in terms of where we are in terms of this market cycle. Of course, what is particularly, I think, important right now is to pay attention to the consistency of these trends. We had a meaningful rebound from the region of the trend mean, and it did so with an upside weekly key reversal on some of these indices. Well, as long as that low holds, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, and it's not all that far away. So that, I think, is the most important point, that we can give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic, and the most recent dynamic was upwards. If that is indeed the case, then there is a potential here that we are moving into the bubble phase. What is going to be most important then is to continue to remember that we are late in the cycle, that all of those arguments about the potential for a recession are relevant just early. Accelerations and bubbly phases are when it is the time when you make money fastest. And as George Soros says, you trade the bubble, but you don't lose sight of the fact that it is a trend ending, and that then the potential for a pullback becomes meaningful. So I do think we're at a very important point in markets right now, because if Wall Street breaks on the upside, it is likely to take a significant number of additional markets with it. There is a significant discount in terms of valuation and indeed leverage in some of the emerging markets. And when we think about the outlook for growth and the demographic dividend that a significant number of these emerging markets have, then it isn't so much about China, but rather I think the big question that people investing in emerging markets are going to have is, how do you invest in emerging markets without taking a bigger position in China? That, I think, is going to be one of the bigger challenges. And betting on countries based on their individual attributes rather than taking a broad spectrum, inverted commas, emerging market fund is probably going to be the best way to do it. What I also found interesting in here today is that the oil price remains really in a rangy environment, but still in a downtrend. Now, it is oversold and it does have the scope to rebound in here, but this does not look like a bullish pattern over the medium term. And there is plenty of supply around. Meanwhile, I think copper is looking more interesting. It's right at the lower side of its range. It bounced yesterday, and while quiet in here today, it was off its lows. And definitely when we think about nickel prices, well, nickel is a key new technology metal. And it does look like it is firming in here. It was up another 18 cents in here today. The other point is that lumber prices are rallying and have bounced pretty impressively from the 300 level. That is at least beginning to price in the potential for increased housing starts. But it's going to have to hold this advance put in over the last 2 weeks, and most particularly hold the $300 area if we are in a support building phase. And if we do start to see the outlook for the US economy starting to pick up again with additional interest rate cuts, then lumber prices should start to do better. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.